And if we vote Leave and take back control, I believe that this Thursday can be our country's Independence Day.
Charlie Mingus, Such Nimble Fingers.
Good. good song, because there is a mighty mountain of moan coming up.
This is going to be a moaning episode.
A tsunami of moan. It's trying to sound intelligent, definitely more intelligent than 52% of this country. My name is Joshua Dan.
I am Mr. G. And we are, I don't even know what I'm going to
say. Angry poets.
I would say.
Angry poets.
It's
two angry poets.
Two angry poets
to understand
that have lost the plot.
What the fuck this country has done to itself?
It's.
Oh my God.
I'm going to have to apologize right now because I'm still in anger mode.
Parental
right?
advisory, right. All of the fucking swear words.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Right. I know
fuck
that.
Trumpet.
Anger is a temporary emotion. I know that once you get past the anger, then you can start dealing with solutions. But right now, I'm really angry with the whole Brexit thing. The 23rd of June shall be known as the day that Boris fucked up Britain, man.
Oh,
right?
Dear, look. Yeah, that is one alliteration that generally... Oh, man. I didn't sleep for the 23rd and 24th. I spent the 23rd doing a hosting an event that was creating alternative and clean energy solutions for Africa.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had, what's his name? Fuse ODG, a band called Afriquai, and a lady called Imani. It was great. I mean, it was very, very business oriented. So you had lots of people in suits.
Yeah.
But all the people stayed around in an open air space on the 23rd, which was a rainy day.
Yeah.
And we were all very jubilant. You had Africans, you had Europeans, all of them trying to make essentially the developing world better. And it was really, really uplifting and hopeful, you
and
know.
Beautiful.
And beautiful. You had someone who had a friend of mine, Suda, and she had, you know, the shaker.
Yeah.
She had invented a shaker where it uses kinetic energy. You shake it enough time and it produces electricity.
Yeah.
And they're selling it cheap to lots of villages because they don't have a lot of electric wires plugged in. Yeah. And sometimes there's a power outage. So all you have to do is essentially use music to create light.
Electricity,
brilliant,
yeah.
Brilliant ideas. Yeah. One amongst
a bit like the guy that did that wind-up radio where you keep winding up and the
radio exactly.
Doesn't need a battery.
And then Brexit happened and then the next day... I hosted a refugee show.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, I've gone to one show and it's technology and we're hopeful. I'm going to another show and it's refugees. And the outlook was just somber at the very best and bleak at its darkest. It's bad enough that people who were here, I mean, I met people from Denmark, I met people from Holland, I met people from Sweden, and they're all thinking, what's going to happen to my job? I met someone who works at Casa Research.
Yeah.
And he was like, basically, after the recession, the UK's scientific fund for cancer research was decimated, and it was the EU that plugged that gap
with
scientists and money.
Yeah.
And now that we've left the EU, that money, that funding, and the scientists are now at risk. And on top of that, you have the refugees who have just come here for a better life, full stop, a better life. And especially with the rise of the racists, because now all of the BNP, the NF, the UKIP, they now believe that more than half the country is
with
on
them.
This.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You just want to... You
see,
you just live.
Here's the point. Racism. I actually don't mind racism, right? In the sense,
No.
You gotta let me qualify my point.
Qualify my point, right?
The idea of people not liking me doesn't fucking bother me. People look at me and think, "Oh man, fuck that dude, man." You know, all the shit that's happening now just reminds me of the 80s. I went to school in the 80s. Racism was on the curriculum, and so it's just the idea that the level of xenophobia, where you would burn your own house. because you hate foreigners so much.
Cut your nose, shoot
that
your
is,
foot.
That
and then you're surprised
you.
That the bleeding is still going
exactly.
on.
Exactly, that absolutely frightens
it's
me.
It's like you had a prick and you're like, oh, I not even a prick. Let's just, you know, economic disadvantage and globalization has done more than a prick. Let's just say, you know, you've been stabbed in the hand. You've been stabbed in the hand and you go, I'll just cut off the whole hand.
Exactly. What it reminds me of, like, the, in Philadelphia in the 1980s, there was this sort of like counterculture group called Move. They occupied this house and they built this wooden fort on top of it.
Mm.
And they started like doing their anti-government messages and swearing and effing and blinding from the top of this fort.
Mm.
The Philadelphia police decided to drop a bomb on top of the house
nice.
To blow up the fort. They said it's the first time mainland America's ever been bombed, right? And this bomb, you can see it on footage of it on YouTube, and the helicopter comes, drops a bag which has got like C4 in it, and it blows up, and they blow up the fort. The fire destroyed the whole neighborhood. To me, that is what the fuck the Brexit crew have done, right?
Yeah.
They destroyed the whole fucking neighborhood. They have consigned our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren to poverty.
Or worse off.
Why would you do that?
Racism!
That to me, I don't understand that.
No,
I can understand you just thinking, okay, I don't like the look of that dude. I want to hang out in my own pub. I can understand you doing all that type of shit, right?
I can understand that.
But why would you then fuck up your own pocket?
You know what? Of everything, okay, look, if it was just the EU, right? And if it's just kind of like, okay, we're voting because fuck the Swedes, fuck the French, whatever. If you're that xenophobic and you want to keep it in the country, I can kind of understand that.
Yeah.
But what did you think was going to happen to Scotland? Now,
exactly.
Scotland was...
The only reason why they decided to stay in the United Kingdom was because of Europe.
EU. Yeah, at the time, if they left the EU, if they left Europe, if they left the United Kingdom last year, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, two years ago.
They would have left...
The United Kingdom.
They would have left the United Kingdom, they would have left EU as well.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of the package. That was part of the package of why they wanted to stay, because they needed to be part of the UK and they needed to be part of the EU. Northern Ireland... The border between Northern Ireland and Ireland is set and has been validated.
And also, dude, it's fractured. I mean, like I said, I'm born and raised in this country. Mm. I know that border.
The bombs, isn't
that it? Border, boy, that border's been bombed so many times. That border's a cause, they call it the Troubles when they refer back to it, right? The delicate relationship in Ireland, it needs to be dealt with extreme sensitivity.
Yeah, so here's the question. This is what I think just is tearing my head up, right? We are now faced with the possible disintegration of the 300-year-old United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Like, kapoof, all gone.
Yeah. And was it worth it?
Was it worth it?
For what? To wave a fucking flag. To be able to throw a stone through some Turkish guy's window.
And here's the real shocker. Here's the honest shocker, right? So, the places that voted the most to leave the EU were also the places that need the most EU fund.
Cornwall.
What the?
Cornwall were getting 60 million a year.
And they did.
Right? And they voted to leave. And now the council is now saying, you know that 60 million that we used to get from the EU, are we still going to get it from the UK?
You know, this is the same place that votes leave. Do they really think that 350 million a week is going to spread out that far across the fictional NHS hospitals that are going to be built and fund all of these places? You know, Obama, when he was talking about taking the country back and we want it back like the old days, Obama, he does this wonderful interview. It's on PBS. I recommend anyone check it out. He's answering a whole bunch of questions in the town hall. And one person specifically asked that, what's he going to do to save the jobs that are leaving and going abroad?
Yeah.
And Obama, he states that the first thing he's going to do is try and get the pay of the countries that the jobs are being sent to as high as America, because that's the only way they can stop jobs.
Yeah.
Because companies, now that globalization has been let out of the box, companies are just going to take advantage of it nilly-willy. If they can train somebody else somewhere else to do something for $1 as opposed to $10 or $12, they're going to do it. And the second thing he said is, people need to let go of the past. It's never coming back.
Exactly. The thing is, Josh, right? The only thing that's going to get us out of this mess is the young. The young people in Britain. The young people who are either born here or born elsewhere, right? The thing that's getting me, this is why I'm trying not to get angry. I'm really trying not to get angry, right? Is them old folk. Every time I turn on TV and I see them old motherfuckers,
it's our country,
right?
You know what
I
mean? Country.
There was one dude just going, I got my country back. I got my country back. It's an old motherfucker, man. Dude, you don't work. You don't fucking work. You're sitting at home during a fucking pension. There is nothing you can do to work us out of a recession.
Pension that's been,
you know what
that,
I mean?
That's been
paid for fucking...
But also, it's been chopped by at least 30%.
Exactly.
With the pound dropping. Like, pension funds have been slashed.
But
the money, you're going to get less for everything you do.
These crew, when they talk about the past, right? I get so vexed. They talk about the past, right? These motherfuckers, right? A lot of them didn't fight in the war, right? They might have grown up in the war.
Their kids
saying,
fought in the
right?
war. You know what
I mean? Exactly. They might have grown up in the war, but man, them motherfuckers didn't fight in the war, right? You know what I mean? They're just old folks pretending they fought in the war, right? They've grown up knowing an NHS service. They've grown up with free education.
Knowing
they've
the postal, grown set, postal
up
service.
With cheap rent and being able to buy your house on a single wage. They've grown up with those things and they've grown up with secure pensions. And when I look at the young now and they're trying to say, okay, we can work our way through it. To go to fucking university costs fucking what? I don't know what, 9,000 a year. 9,000 a year.
Do
you know what I'm saying? You need money. Why would you vote your children and your grandchildren and great-grandchildren into recession? Why would you do that?
There was a woman online, said it on Twitter, so please take this with a pinch of salt. The woman apparently voted Leave.
Yeah.
But she failed to notice that her son-in-law went and made a business in Croatia.
Yeah.
And this was going to affect him. Because what's going to happen to his status when Britain
exactly.
leaves the EU? Do people really think, all those Spanish people who sent in postal votes, what do you think is going to happen to you and your houses and whatnot? Do you really think that...
It's not connected.
It's not connected.
How do people think their wages get paid? How do people think their pensions get paid? How do people think that things get built? Business. Okay, the EU is not perfect.
It's not perfect.
Don't get me wrong.
And you know what?
I tell you what. I'm getting angry, right? When they start saying about like, oh, the EU is this big thing and we don't vote them in. We don't vote people in for the House of Lords. People in the House of Lords.
The Queen.
We don't vote the Queen in.
The Queen.
You know what I'm saying?
We're not going to vote the next Prime Minister in.
Exactly. There's loads of things that you don't vote in. Democracy has got layers, right? There's layers of democracy and at the top of democracy is usually some fucking dictator somewhere. Hidden by layers of democracy. And so, again, I don't know.
The only reason why the only reason why he can claim to be elected for anything, he's elected as a what's good
MEP,
EU MEP. He's not elected for any house or any MP in the UK.
Exactly.
So what was this chat about?
And here's the only thing I can give Nigel Farage respect for, right? Is that on the day of the victory, he came out with a bottle of champagne and he did his whole fucking Ali, I shook up the world speech. But when you saw Boris Johnson and Michael Gove on the day they won, those were two people that didn't have a plan. They could have been running the English football team, man. They didn't have a fucking clue what they were doing. Boris, he looked like a rabbit with his, you know, head caught in the headlights, man, right?
Yeah.
And when I looked at his face and I just thought, oh my God, you don't know what you're doing.
Oh no.
He got £5,000
to write an article in the Telegraph, having hidden for the whole weekend. He got £5,000 to write that article. And in that article, do you know what he said? We should be part of Europe.
Exactly.
That's what he said. We should be part of Europe.
Your jobs are safe. You can be able to buy abroad. I sent a tweet saying the reason why London stayed Remain is because we know Boris too well. Mm. And I had all these Leave dudes coming back at me saying, oh, well, you voted him in. The thing I remember about Boris, right, is that during the London riots, that guy disappeared. He wasn't around when London was burning. That guy was not around. The only time I remember seeing Boris, right, was London 2012, waving his flags, right? When the shit hits the fan, Boris disappears. And that's what he's known for.
We've got another section, hopefully with a guest. We've got so much to talk about. I mean, we really need to talk about how the arts are going to respond to this. But I would like to move into the section with I'm Losing You by Aretha Franklin. It's going to be sad songs all day, man. It's going to be sad songs. Try and sound intelligent.
You'll soon be gone. They say there's no use in holding on. But I love you so. and have yourself a fling. Cause when you're through, I'll be here waiting, waiting just for you. Say it's not true. No, 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 I'm losing you.
And that was a No, 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 I'm Losing You by Aretha Franklin. And this is
Trying. This is what I'm just,
really hard.
It's just called Trying now.
Really hard.
It's so bad that I can't even insult Jossie's tune.
No, right? There's nothing to insult. I swear, I'll put this on record. You'd cost that tune, I'll kill you, right?
I can see that in your face. You know? I'm putting away all sharp obstacles, man. Yeah.
Trying to sound intelligent. My name is Joshua Dan.
I am Mr. G, and we are what's known in post-Brexit mode. We're in that mode, and we're just trying to break down what has occurred. And being poets that we are, we figured we would just get some of the biggest names in the game to give their opinion on what has occurred over the last week. And we have got the wonderful George the Poet, who's just arrived, fresh from Heathrow.
You just came from Uganda, right?
Yeah.
Just landed in the country. Straight
I leave
to
you lot alone for 5 minutes.
Dude,
you should have fucking your car.
Dude, you're lucky there was a runway for you to land on, bro. You're lucky your plane wasn't circling around in the air and got missing in Malaysia, and they're just looking for bits of your poems out in the bloody sea. That's what you're lucky. You weren't here on the front line.
No, Redford. You are not here.
You were chilling, eating tilapia and mantoke, you know what I'm saying?
With
the Ugandan crew, right? We were out here in the trenches. Oh, man.
But generally, we're going to talk all about that. We're going to get right into the Brexit brunch. But first off, you've had a sterling career. You've had an amazing career over the last 3-4 years, right?
Yeah, it's been cool. Thank you.
No, we're both fans of your videos. I remember watching back when you were doing videos, little clips, like when you were supporting people at, I think it was Lioness or Jazz Cafe.
Yeah.
You did that metaphor about the hoodie, just like, rewind, play. And I remember I watched the one where you did the American accent, hip-hop accent.
And switch over,
That was some sick stuff.
Thank you, man.
How's it been from you? Talk about it from your side, man.
It's been amazing because I've actually been a lyricist for 10 years. I'm 25 now. I started spitting publicly when I was 15. I started writing when I was 14, 13. Yeah.
Right.
And I went 5 years like in frustration because I was in the rap community, the rap circle, and it was grime really at the time. And I felt like, to me, the sentiment was the most important thing. But I felt like people didn't really respect sentiment in grime, as in the value of what you're actually saying.
Did you record any grime tracks?
Yeah.
Are they around?
Mixtape.
Can I find them?
You probably can't find them. I've gathered them all back.
You punched the internet.
I found them. Trust me. He's like Tony Stark reclaiming Stark Industries. Everything. You know what I mean? None of my weapons are being used by anybody.
I came back in there like Steve Jobs back in Mac. But what I did... I also logged into my MySpace recently. I was just going back to it.
You went back to MySpace?
Yeah.
Lonely out there, innit?
Yeah.
That's cold, man.
There's tumbleweed on the screen. But when I was listening back to it, I was thinking, yo, although like I was young and I didn't really know exactly what my main arguments were or what my point for talking was, it was very good training in terms of developing an appreciation for words, especially given that I was studying English literature, which I took very seriously. My studies have always been a big feature in my life.
Yeah.
It just transformed my interaction with words and just enriched my whole, I suppose, poetic palette.
So George came down to Chillpill. He's another one that came down to Chillpill, man. Came down where there's like emerging artist slot. Because I've been so rude to some of our emerging stars.
This is a long-running theme.
This is a long-running theme of mine, right? Dude, when you came down, I didn't even notice. I'll be honest with you, right? You came down and thought, oh, yeah, look at this little kid, man. Oh, yeah, he's doing his thing. Oh, well done, man. Cool. Yeah, well done. Cheers. Next act. Two twos, man. I'm sitting down watching TV. I see, was it Hackney Weekender? I see my man up there. I was like, that's the motherfucker I was just having I couldn't even do that claim I made him talk. Do you know what I'm saying, right?
Talking them bars like Sky One and everything.
That was random.
Well, congratulations on your journey and on your path, man. And what do you see the future holding in?
There is no future.
Wow.
No, I'm joking.
Hey, wait. We are not. Brexit.
We ain't got there yet.
Brexit.
It's coming.
It's not right now. What about like your music career? Is that
Yeah, music.
Because you did the chicken and the egg thing. Yeah. And you did Check One too. See, I've been stalking you for ages.
Oh, still,
I know all your moves.
For real.
Yeah, but yeah.
So, music was like, it was like, I'd come full circle because obviously, like I said, I started off as an MC. Used to do my little mixtapes and radio and all that with my brethren. I came up and I grew into poetry, but I have a short attention span if I don't feel challenged, innit?
Yeah.
So once I started doing YouTube webcam videos, I was like, that was new territory at first.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I was like, okay, this is where it is. So then the next step was to start doing poetry with some form of music, and that started off being piano.
Yeah.
Then I was like, I get this as well. Not saying I perfected it, either. Just that I've got it.
You just did your thing, yeah.
Yeah. So, come 2013, it was my final year in university, and I've been fortunate to have two sold out headline shows.
How'd you find touring?
Love it. I love touring, man, because really and truly, that's where I differentiated myself as a rapper. I knew that the substance of what I was saying is best spoken to you.
Yeah.
Not performed at you or spat at you.
Yeah.
In a radio set. So, being on stage, that's where I really found my feet.
Right.
Like I said, like a challenge. So I graduated. A couple weeks after I graduated, I got signed. And the label didn't really get me. They didn't know that.
Where to place you.
I didn't care. Like I knew where to place me. I was not looking for any instruction like that. But they didn't know that I'm an ex-rapper. They didn't know that I am, you know, like, people like my poetry. They're not just pretending. And they're not just jumping on the buzz. They like when I do poems.
Yeah.
So they tried to just send me in all different directions. But the bottom line is, my live shows were like part of the strongest aspect of my career, which they didn't foresee.
Yeah.
So,
I like the track you did, Tap Dancing. That's a track I really liked.
Yeah.
You know? Is that how you kind of felt at that time in terms of, I mean, obviously you could say it's a metaphor for anybody just trying to get through life, or did you see it as a metaphor where you are a hard to place artist in what's known as the acceptable field of entertainment, and maybe you're just trying to be pushed towards this way, pushed towards that way?
I couldn't even, this isn't even a metaphor, this is what I'm saying, isn't it?
I am tap dancing, you motherfuckers are making me tap dancing.
I was so pissed off when I wrote that tune.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to cut, like, in that position, as a signed artist, you're not expected to say what you think. Everyone kind of leans on you to play the game and not rub the label the wrong way. But I was more on a thing where, again, I would speak to everyone directly. If he was in the finance department, legal, whatever, I would come and I'd make myself clear. You know, if I felt like you weren't taking me seriously, I wouldn't like throw my rattle out of the pram. I'd go out of my way to ensure that the message has been imparted.
Yeah.
So when I wrote Tap Dancing, that was for, I wanted to sit down with the president of the label and watch his face when I played the tune. And he loved it. And I'm thinking, all right, you can love it, yeah, but like, do you understand what I'm saying to you? I'm saying this shit needs to stop. It needs to change. And it didn't, so I left.
I've seen.
I left, cuz. You've got time to waste.
Love, right.
Cool. I think the theme of leaving is going to be quite prevalent throughout this episode, right?
You're working with Prince Harry at the moment.
Yeah.
Talk about it, man.
I was just with him yesterday, actually.
Mate, talk about it. Yeah, I was just with him yesterday.
I was with Harry, man.
I was with Harry, man.
I got the new stamp. I got the stamp the post office don't sell, bro. I got that stamp. You can post it and it goes everywhere, man.
I got the Royal Nando's card, bro.
Trust me.
Forget the black card. I got the Royal
Nando's, man. I can get fish served in Nando's, man. You know what I mean?
Details. Give me the goss. Give me the Harry goss.
Prince Harry has founded a charity that aims to tackle HIV.
Yeah.
And I'm the ambassador for that charity.
Oh, wow. Well done, man.
Thank you. He first of all asked me to write a poem about it, about their work in particular. And I thought, I was actually intrigued. They take a different approach to HIV treatment. It's all about providing psychosocial support, which gets overlooked, especially like with an African mentality. You'd be like, blood.
Yeah.
We're still stigmatized and stuff. It's like a lot of people don't even feel comfortable. A lot of young people on the African continent struggle with adhering to their medication just because of stigma. They want to be seen to be, you feel me? So that's the work of the charity. I'm an ambassador. Yesterday they had a concert, a fundraiser. Headlining was like Lauren Vula, Nico and Vins, and Coldplay.
Okay.
So I was on the lineup. I was just before Coldplay. And It was in Kensington Palace Gardens. It was sick. Yeah, it's good, man.
No, for a poet to just go from being ignored by Mr. G a little night, you know what I'm saying, right, in the middle of nowhere, to chilling with a crew, man. No, man, boy, you did good for yourself, man.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially, I think, man, that's what a lot of people are aiming for, you know, just to be the poet in between Coldplay and Laura Mavola. Mm. I'm not even kind of like, oh, I'm the poet and I'm just doing a section of someone else's track. No, it's George the Poet on a lineup. It's just right there. Yeah, man's coming to come and check you out. That's brilliant. That's great. Well, yeah.
Is there anything that you feel that you need or want to say in terms of your work?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, okay, we're going to get into the Brexit thing, I suppose. Like, to speak on it in a broader sense, I like my work to be, like, socially constructive.
Mm.
Now, I battle with my friends about this a lot of the time because they're like, they think that I'm putting too much on my shoulders. They're like, you got to be you. You're just a human.
Yeah.
You might not always have something to say that is, you
weighty
know,
and gravitas.
Relevant. Gandalf here.
Not so much Gandalf here, but it's more about, like, you ain't got to be responsible all the time. Sometimes, like, I'm a young man, innit? Sometimes what I got up to on the weekend is pure fuckery. Excuse my language.
No,
like,
this is not that show.
This ain't that type of show.
The fuck you
exactly.
Exit time, man.
Trust me. Yeah.
Ain't no watershed left.
Yeah, like, but I feel like there's enough people out here, especially young black men. There's enough of us giving you, like, the low down dirty reality of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can do that, and I've done that at times in my work. But generally, I would like my work to. A lot of my friends grew up in care. Or like without like stable family situations, I would like for a kid that is in that situation to be able to listen to me, believe me, but also leave with some sort of information about how to navigate the real world, not just the street, not like the streets ain't the real world.
Yeah.
But like, that's where my whole impetus for writing has come from. So I want my catalogue to add up like a kind of like a George's guidebook to life.
George's guidebook to life.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's strong ambitions, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. A lot of my friends disagree with me on that. They're like, "Bruv, just relax. You're overthinking it. Do you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, definitely. I'll do me." But at the same time, everyone's out here just doing them, and it doesn't necessarily like everyone who voted Leave was just doing them.
Yeah.
You get me? Sometimes you got to put a little thought beyond your immediate
just
impulse.
Just my opinion, or just
exactly.
My feeling, just my heart feeling.
We don't live in isolation.
Yeah.
You feel me?
That's true. Good luck to you, and I don't feel like there's need for good luck. It's kind of already happening.
It's already manifesting,
it's already
man.
Manifesting.
You know what I mean? George's Guide for Life,
George's
man.
Guide for Life. What's the next release?
So there's a current single out. I'm featuring on a big Chase and Status song. It's called Spoken Word. That's out now. I'm coming with a new poem. I'm going to drop a new poem at the end of this week.
Oh, see.
Yeah, which is it's a long time since I've done that.
It's Brexit, isn't it?
Yeah, you know. Seriously. Come on, man. This is pressing business.
It's pressing business, yeah. Obviously, those of us who've been doing spoken word on the sidelines, it's been mighty impressive seeing what you've achieved.
Thank you.
I remember watching you on Juice Holland and just, I mean, spoken word on Juice Holland. But sure, you had a piano playing there, but at the end of the day, there's no big music section. There's no rapper. You're not featuring. It's George the Poet here, and he's doing music. That was a big thing. Just,
you know what got me is the fact he called himself George the Poet. So I'd say artists like yourself and Kate Tempest, there was a shift in the acceptance of like, okay, we're not dealing with this person as a rapper. This is a poet. Again, you know, it goes back to like lots of other artists we talk about with Silly Breaks and stuff like that, is that YouTube kind of freed the art form in a way that back in the days of, I don't know, the Benjamin Zephaniahs and the Linton Kwesi Johnsons, where YouTube freed the art form to just be a poet. Mm. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being spoken word,
there's no comedy involved. There'll be no backflips. Mm. You know, it's not featuring. It's not a little novelty track. It's not the beginning of the film, like say in the case of Trainspotters. It's just bare poem. Here's the poem. Deal with the poem. Accept the poem. And yeah, also listen to the poet some more because he's got more poems like that.
Mm.
It's been a great age to watch. And it's funny that you mentioned that you enjoy touring, and we're about to move to a section where your ability to tour the European Union might be
slightly compromised. But until then, what was the song you went to?
Yeah, so my song is a throwback from the 90s New York hip hop scene, Nas and the Firm, Affirmative Action.
Bang.
That is the agenda for the next Prime Minister of this country. Well, I must tell you, my friends, you who have waited faithfully for the punchline of this speech, that having consulted colleagues and in view of the circumstances in Parliament, I have concluded that person cannot be me.
Who will relate? We play for high stakes and on point. Catch them and break. Undress them, time with tape. No escape. The Corleone, Fettuccine, Capone. Roam in your own zone again. Kidnapped the clap in your dome. We got it sewn. The firm are the wars unknown. Lower your tone. Face it. Homicide cases get thrown. Aristocrats. Politic and deli with diplomats. See me, I'm unofficial. Mac, Lex, Coop, Triple Black.
Criminal
Mac.
Thoughts in the blue ports. My destiny's to be the new boy. A nigga poorly gotta die too short. A nigga's dead on. At Kia Heron. They found a dead on the couch with his dick in his mouth. I put the hit out. Yo, the smoothest killer since Bugsy. Bitches love me. In Queens, where my drugs be? I wear guest jeans and rugbies. Yo, my people from Medina, they will see you when you re-up. Bring your heater or your queen go between us. Real shit. My Desert Eagle got an ill grip. I chill with niggas that hit Dominicans. Bronx is still bricks. My red beam made a dread scream. It's pray the Fed team. Corleone be turning niggas to fiends. Yukons and Ninja Black Lexus. Mega the pretty boy with mafia connections. It's the firm, nigga said it.
Yo, my mind is seeing through your design like blind fury. I shine Jerry sipping on crushed grapes. We lust papes and push cakes inside the casket at Just Wake. It's sickening. He just finished bitten upstate and out of projects. It's talking that somebody gotta die shit. It's logic as long as it's nobody that's in my clique. My man Smoke knew how to expand coke and Mr. Coffee. Feds cost me 2 mil to get the system off me. Life's a bitch, but God forbid the bitch divorce me. I'll be flooded with ice or hellfire can't scorch me. Cuban cigars, meeting Foxy at the Mars, moving cars. Your top poppy, Senor Escobar.
In the black Camaro, firm deep, all my niggas heal the blackest sparrow. While the bees beat the apparel through the darkest tunnel. I got visions of multi-millions in the biggest bundle. In the Lex, pushed by my nigga Jungle. E-Money bags, got my West Sean Don bundle of 62. They ain't got a clue what we about to do. My whole team, we shitting hard like Zaw. Soul Side, Foxy Brown, Cormega, and Escobar. I keep a fat Marquise piece, laced in all the illest snakeskin. Armani sweaters, Carolina Herrera. Be the firm, baby. From BK to the bridge, my nigga Wiz. Operation Firm Biz, so what the deal is? I keep a fat UL, sipping crispy, sitting on top of 50 grand in the Nautica van. We stay incognito like all the thug niggas in Marcy the God. They praise Allah when visions are gone.
And that was Nas and the Firm with Affirmative Action. This is Trying to Sound Intelligent.
I'm Mr. G.
I am Josh, and we have the wonderful
George the Poet.
George Poet, the house, and we are about to talk about bricks.
Well, okay, so George, you've been away for, you know, a little while. You just come back from Uganda, touched down into the UK.
Thankfully.
It still is the UK as we speak. So, in your opinion, Brexit, what happened?
Okay. Someone said something very interesting to me a while ago, just when I came off stage. He really enjoyed my performance, and he came up to me and said, storytellers run the world. And he's very right, because when you think about the majority of things that you think, and the majority of your knowledge base,
yeah,
you didn't get it from first hand.
Yeah,
you didn't get it directly from the source. It's not like I didn't figure out, how gravity works. I was told, then I just accepted
an accepted narrative.
Yeah. That's what happened with Brexit. An accepted narrative, bro. I will never forget when I was on Sky News, yeah, debating Nigel Farage a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
you debated Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
Was that with the immigration?
The immigration.
No, I mean that big van.
No. Right. I was on the news for the van.
Yeah.
But there was another time when I was just on the news debating immigration.
And you did, like,
you weren't even there.
Like, two fingers in the eye.
We were in different studios.
No one there.
Segregation in poetry.
You're like, yes, this George seems like a lovely fellow. Just in case. Nigel in another room.
So what was interesting was, like, they handed us a fact sheet, like, before the general election, before the campaigns had even really
kicked off.
Mm. The top fact was 67% of Britons feel like immigration is a pressing issue or will be a prevalent issue or a decisive issue in the election. Bruv, the fact after that was 82% of those interviewed have never met an immigrant.
In their life, yeah.
Wow.
They didn't mention that fact when the interviews started rolling.
Yeah.
And I wasn't as prepared. I wasn't like that's why I don't really talk about this debate, because I don't think I did a great job.
Well, no, it doesn't matter, because I mean, like, how did you find Farage when you were in the debate? Like, as a poet or as an artist, there's always going to be some kind of like a gut feeling that you feel either being in a certain situation or observing a certain situation where later on you might artistically pluck it for something. So what was your feeling when you were in that debate?
That's a good question. I just felt wary. I didn't feel that I'm here to... Obviously, I'm here to tell the truth, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, I know these people can't handle the truth. I know there's no way I could just say what it is and then sail off into the sunset.
Isn't that, sorry, didn't mean to break in, but isn't that like a terrifying thing that I feel affects us as people from other ethnic backgrounds?
Yeah.
That we, I mean, I think this affects me, this affects me and Mr. G. I've talked about this for
tap
ages,
dancing,
and it's really terrifying to see someone like you who's gone to that level, you know, who's in sandwiched in between Coldplay and Laura Mavola, and you honestly feel at the point, despite the fact that you are outspoken about your political leanings and opinions and stuff, that they ain't ready. Can you imagine that? Do you ever think Nigel ever wakes up in the morning and goes,
he doesn't.
They're not ready for that.
No, he doesn't.
Because I tell you, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it's not even that I feel like they're not ready. I just keep on thinking, what's going to happen to me the next day?
That's what I'm saying. So, so that's where my head was at the time. I was like, bro, can I really afford, how in can I afford to go? I'm in a different space now. I say whatever, whenever, and I'll deal with the consequences, obviously, all things considered. But at the time, like, the gall of him and the audacity, like, he was being him. And he was going unchecked. He was going unchecked by the presenter who's feeding him these incendiary data.
Yeah.
But it's like... Like, you'll gas him up, like, Nigel, what do you think about the 67%? But you're not asking about the 82% of that 67% who've never met an immigrant. I think that's quite a significant
fact.
You know what I'm saying? So to go back to Brexit, I feel like a lot of people have been fed meta-narratives about the country, the identity of the country, originally, who we are.
Mm.
Secondly, the direction of the country, the reasoning for that direction, and... oversimplified solutions, like, but people have actually swallowed that. That's the bit that I didn't expect.
Mm.
I was like,
none of us expected.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we've been laughing at
the government. UKIP. Didn't expect it.
UKIP started off as a joke. Obviously, they've UKIP's been around for a long time, but in as far as the last general election, I remember reading like dismissive articles about UKIP and Farage in The Economist.
Yeah,
you feel me? So like, for it to have escalated so far in 3.5 years. It's like,
but in the last election, UKIP got 4 million votes, which is more than the SNP got.
Real talk, that's what I'm saying.
But they were spread all around, so they didn't get enough seats.
And I think people took that for granted. The fact that everyone was like, UKIP was a pipe dream all along. It's like, nah, 4 million votes doesn't just disappear.
Part of me feels like this is like one big Eton mess almost, right? Yeah, very good, man.
See what you did.
Yeah,
there.
I see what I did. No, but it's like it's almost like like some prank being played between these guys at the expense of the country.
You know,
like Cameron said he's going to call a referendum to shut up the Eurosceptics. At that time, Boris was London mayor. Boris was in bed with all the big European banks trying to get him to bring as much money to London as possible, just loving everything.
Yeah.
Boris then leaves, becomes an MP, sees that the Leave campaign is just floundering because, you know, no one's really paying it much attention, and then just jumps on it and gives it that Boris juice almost as a get back to Cameron.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost this thing where he's just trying to sort of like, there's always been this one-upmanship between them. And so Boris puts his dumb fucking blonde fucking bonds exactly into the game and raises it up a billion levels, and then Cameron just figures, all right, okay, well played, young Etonian. I will take your fucking Brexit and I will raise you a resignation. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Right?
No, I see what you mean.
I ain't gonna pull the fucking Article 50. I'm not gonna pull that trigger. I'm not gonna be going down in history as the guy that completely fucked up England forever.
Yeah,
I'm gonna let you do it, man. And it's like a game they're playing between each other. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're waiting to get caught by the headmaster. And there is no headmaster.
Here's the thing.
No, like,
considering the way this campaign was run, and considering the fact that in February, Boris was against leaving.
Yeah.
I feel in my bones that he doesn't really want to leave.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, the mess is either unfixable, or and we all have to go to Scotland... Boris Johnson, he's a racist. I mean, I've seen his articles for The Spectator. He's a liar. He's scum.
Pickaninnies.
He's a nasty piece of work. But he's also someone who really, really wants to be liked, not just by the people here, but by the people all over the land. It's why he writes shitty shit, because anything that can get him his column inches, anything that can get him on the smiley faces, it's the reason why, you know, when shit goes down, he will disappear, as he's done.
Yeah.
Because he wants to be liked. He wants people to look at his haircut and go, oh, you're really cute. You don't know what you're
doing. Yeah.
You understand? So, just trying to calm down.
So tell me, what was the opinion in Africa then?
Everyone was like offering their condolences to me.
All right.
They're like, I don't know what just happened there, George, but right. Stay strong. Like,
I have a bed for you. You can stay here. But if the pound drops more, your rent goes up.
I wouldn't be surprised if next time I come to Uganda, I took about, yeah, for just £2 a month, you can sponsor a British family. You know what I'm saying? Like, they really look on us as, yeah, like, no one understood what was happening. The general impression is England's kind of gone crazy. Remember, I'm getting Brexit from international coverage of our domestic affairs.
Yeah.
I'm not even used to that as it is. And it doesn't look that different from hearing that Greece is crashing. Like, what's the difference?
No, because that's why I like watching that Russian news, man.
Yeah,
right? Al Jazeera and the French one, right? Yeah. Whenever you want to find out about a country, watch the news from next door just to find out
from the other side.
Exactly, because what you're going to tend to notice is probably in the weeks to come, they're going to start playing up the whole idea that a deal can be made, trade can go up, because the minute that Brexit was announced, pound drop, millions got slashed off the stock exchange, right? When fucking Cameron resigned, boy, the pound hit Australia, do you know what I'm saying, right? You know, believe, man, you couldn't find the pound, man. You know what I'm saying? You'd be digging in the dirt for the pound. And then the minute that, like, Cameron then starts to meet with the EU people, then you start seeing it starts to rise. Yeah. So it's all about confidence. It's about confidence. And so once they figured out, I guess, God knows which arsehole is going to be leading us, right?
Oh, dear.
They're going to have to go on this charm offensive of saying, keep calm, yeah, carry on, yeah, keep calm, carry on. Because as long as there seems to be some element of a future of trade in the UK, foreign firms will invest in the UK. Mm. But if people start thinking that, okay, then the banks can easily locate themselves to Frankfurt and Paris and Berlin, that firm in, was it Sunderland or whatever, that Nissan firm, they can very easily stop selling cars and because they're not accessing the UK market and then go over to Germany. There's a difference between reliable evidence and credible evidence. Credible evidence is something where I make you believe it.
I can believe it. Yeah.
Reliable evidence is the facts. It's got facts behind it. So if someone's credible, they could be talking bullshit, but they can sell it to you. Mm. If someone's reliable, they can just say it in a fucked up way, and you might not even buy it. Yeah?
So, relaying this back to art, you're someone who's kind of dabbled in politics, sort of kind of like political poetry at the last after the last election, you released Search Party, right? And you're going to be releasing a poem about Brexit, as you've mentioned, Gordon. Yeah. Right. What's that going to be about? Like, what angle are you taking, so to speak?
All right. Well, like I said, I think one of the things that have led to Brexit is a confused self image in the UK, yeah? So, like, who are we? Who are we?
Are we really great? Should we just scratch it out now?
Yeah, I feel like Britain's...
Wait, after that football game with Iceland, man.
I feel like Britain's got to do some soul searching, yeah? But that is futile if, yeah? If you... Like, you know when you ask a question just to hear what you want to hear?
Mm. Yeah.
If you're not prepared to be honest with yourself, don't bother. That's the only constructive... Remember I said, I want to be constructive in society instead of just say what I want to say. So, me just being in my feelings, I would just go and just make a poem about, you lot fucked up. You done fucked up now. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know you fucked up, man. You know you done fucked up.
That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
That's all I want to say. But really and truly, I wouldn't look back on that and think, yeah, I'm glad I put that message out there. So, what I think I should say is like, all right, look... It's like a divorce, isn't it? Or like a family rift, a deep family rift.
Yeah.
Like, your decision has impacted my life, and I think you're completely wrong. Now, in order to move forward, you need to hear me. And I need to hear you. I need to understand why you just did that. Now, if my anger...
Why did you do this?
I hate you so much right now! I hate you so much right now!
You weren't happy with the size of the bathrooms, and you left the tap running, and now the bathroom is flooded, and we no longer have a flat.
So, okay.
Why?
Okay,
so why did you do that?
Don't you think... Here's the thing. In the same way in which we can say that the Leave campaign have been sold a deluded narrative, you can also... Also, and I know you guys are going to jump on me on this.
We're going to jump.
That there is a narrative that the Remain campaign buy into. I'll say this, and I do this myself, because what I do now is I go through the news and I want them to find the most ignorant Leave voter, some dude with a misspelt tattoo across his forehead, some dude with with BMP written on the side, and I want him to just
who was also on the Jeremy Carr show once.
Yeah. And I want him to just stand there and just go, oh, I'm glad we kicked them all out, right? And that's all I want to see. I don't want to see someone that's actually articulating a point of view.
But here's the thing, right? So far I've seen that. I've seen Muslimic talk about how he doesn't like the Muslims. We've seen the regrets it, you know, the people who are just kind of like,
They
didn't know my vote would count. Yeah, I honestly haven't yet seen Mr. Articulate Leave, because either A, they've just gone really quiet, haven't seen that it's happened, or B, they don't exist.
Okay, so both, I feel like I really identify with what both of you are saying. First of all, I do believe the Articulate Leavers.
Because 17 million is a lot of people.
I don't mean articulate leavers. I mean the people that articulate a case that, you know, is fathomable. I think they exist, but I think the media turn the volume down on them.
Yeah.
And they do that because it's the media. Like, they like appeasing to sensibilities. I feel like, let's say the general liberal media like to put across this image of leavers being uneducated, racist, northerners, yeah? And sometimes I slip into, like, accepting that narrative.
Yeah.
What occurred to me recently over the past few days is that those demographics, like the not having gone to university, being over a certain age, or being in the North, yeah, those aren't the main things about the Leave profile that bother me. What bothers me is that you saw Nigel Farage's poster and he wasn't bothered.
Exactly.
Who would not be bothered by that?
This is what kills me when people tell me that they are, what do you want to call them, educated, or people who can articulate themselves properly, who joined the Leave campaign. I'm like, first off, you saw that, and secondly, Scotland.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Scotland was overwhelmingly for Remain. Even the Daily Mail voted for Remain.
Because they want to sell papers.
Because they want to sell papers, and they knew people in Remain. And if you are articulate, if you understand economics, if you understand the breadth of how entangled the UK is with EU, you would know that if EU leaves and Scotland votes to Remain, Scotland will stay. You would know
I think that the way to sell it is just the idea that this is an aging population. And so all these old folks who are pensioners and above have got to realise that the money is going to come from the working population. And so there aren't enough youth here. That's the problem. So when they're moaning about people coming in, people coming in,
do you know what I mean?
When they're talking about people coming in, there aren't enough youth here.
Yes.
There are jobs here, and people need to come here to do the jobs, and they're going to go where the jobs are. And if the fucking idea that the way we get rid of immigration is that we tank the economy down to we're a fucking third world bloody status, I'll be getting on a boat and going to bloody France. Do you know what I'm saying? Right?
I'm going to Scotland, bro. Don't even test me. I'm going to Scotland. They got salmon.
But this is one thing that I've come to accept as well. People are irrational. So I wouldn't bunch it all together. I wouldn't say that if you could overlook all of these compelling economic arguments,
and racial arguments.
Common sense argument. What I would call a common sense. I wouldn't say that if you can overlook that, you must not be smart, or you must not be able to articulate, you must not be able to string an argument together. People are irrational.
I get that. I do get that. I honestly...
So knowing that people are irrational, right? And knowing that in terms of if the argument gets too complex, then...
They're checking out.
Surely it is the job of the politicians, the people that are putting the case forward, to put it in the most simplest case way.
It's the job of the storytellers.
Exactly. The fact is that the Leave campaign told a better story, or more palatable story.
Yeah, not necessarily. So, the plot thickens. Now, we've got two storytelling camps, yeah? We've got a population. What kind of population are we looking at? Population that is pissed off.
Yeah.
Leave didn't make them pissed off. It capitalized on their pissed offness and ramped it up. Everyone was pissed off. That's what the riots in 2011 was about.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. We're pissed off. There's not enough money to go around.
Apparently.
I've got my arguments about that. Mm. Yeah, but we feel it. We can feel that.
Well, we're living in times of austerity.
Mm. Yeah, we're in an age of austerity.
We had a good Olympics, though. Well, we found money for Olympics, man. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, oh, we love it.
We found some Olympic money, man.
We
snap,
love it.
Some Bolt money, man.
Oh, man, my city has a lot of faces.
Right?
So, boom. This is the context of what we're dealing with. Now, we've got these two storytelling camps, and it's not about whose argument is strongest. It's not. It's about whose argument sticks. Yeah. Whose argument is the most popular?
Mm.
You feel me? So when you've got that context and you've got leavers who are just shameless, like there's no shame. Like I will say whatever. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Like that's been UKIP's pattern.
Yeah.
Like I don't care how factually accurate this is.
I'm just gonna say it. I'm gonna stand in front of a picture that doesn't even.
But you guys, supposing you take an articulate leave point of view where they say, all right, I admit that the far right, in terms of the Farages and further right, have taken on board the Leave campaign, but the whole idea of who makes the decisions, can they be voted out?
If you are articulate, if you do understand this country's history and you still are fueled by some kind of nationalistic pride, some part of you will think, you know what? This vote is not worth breaking up 300 years of a United Kingdom. It's just not worth that. People in Wales, right? The people, like you said, the storytellers who are in charge should have been looking at this going, if we get this leave, we lose this funding.
But I don't think... We
lose our only lifeline in return.
I did a paper in final year.
Mm.
I studied social political sciences and this paper was called The Political Economy of Capitalism. And I realised why economics had never grabbed me. And it's like... We're really just going to sit here and talk about numbers and ignore the fact that human beings are crazy. There's clearly value in studying economics getting your head around it. But human beings are crazy. You feel me? So around and say, the Leave storytellers should factor in their own vested interests. No. This is why I say it's like a family dispute or like a divorce between people who were once lovers. Because stuff that comes out is so... irrational.
I've got a great story about this. Go on.
Good. I totally get your point because you can see the same thing with climate change. It's like
the entire
planet. Like, I want to drive my car though.
That's your argument.
800 gallons by the mile.
And you dedicated your life as an academic and a researcher to come to me with that. And it's the same with Obamacare. I heard doctors saying that socialism it's wrong. You pay your way. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're arguing
over life. Yeah, there's a classic tale where they say who what was going through the mind of the person that cut the last tree on Easter Island. What were you going to use it for, man?
Maybe he didn't know. Maybe there were only two left anyway.
Exactly. I got to get it before he has. I got to get that last tree, man.
You going to cut it or is it me?
Check this out. I was in Brazil and I was at Rio Airport and I was there talking to this Portuguese guy. And I said, how come you're over here, right? And he just goes, I'm over here to see my wife's family. And I said, you enjoying yourself? He goes, oh, man, I can't stand them, man. But I bought the ticket. I had to come out here. And so I said, how come your wife's not here, right? And he just goes, it's a funny thing, man. I work as a truck driver back in Portugal. And I got a parking ticket. And I argued against the parking ticket. And... I didn't want to pay the parking ticket and they kept making the parking ticket more and more and more and more and more and more, right? And eventually my wife just says to me, look, why don't we just pay the parking ticket with the money that we're going to use to go on holiday? And I said, well, you can pay for it with your money, but I'm still going to fight this thing. So she paid for the ticket, the parking ticket. He carried on fighting and it was like the equivalent of say the parking ticket is £60, right? The whole escapade cost him £1,400. Wow. And his wife has spent her holiday money rather than doing the gentlemanly thing of allowing her to go see her family in Brazil. My man went on the holiday to go see in-laws he didn't even fucking like.
But dude, I think we've been arguing about Brexit all day, and I think you, what's it called, we've definitely touched on a new area of it that people are just fucking stupid. Not stupid, irrational. Because I started this morning with, no, they're fucking racist. Oh, fucking 17 million of them. And now I'm just kind of like, nah, if you're going to use like a sample on it, you should use Human Nature by Michael Jackson.
It ain't hard to tell. Why? It ain't hard to tell.
It's human nature. Why? Why?
Oh, God.
It ain't hard to tell.
Right?
All
right,
cool. I have to pick a song. Yeah, and the song I'm going to pick is Sunlocks and Claws. I can't pick anything else. That's the one for me. All right, I'm trying to tell you, Jen, we're going to be coming back with loads of what did anyone watch and why it's problematic and why it's literally so irrelevant in the face of full-blown Armageddon. Intelligent.
Beautiful tune, Josh. Wonderful tune. Absolutely amazing. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Thank you very much.
You know what
much.
I mean?
My name is Josh.
It's not about the truth. It's about the stories we tell. So this is Trying to Sound Intelligent. I'm Mr. G.
I'm Joshua Dan.
And we've got the brilliant guest.
George the Poet.
Yeah, so we're just going to talk about...
Can I talk about what I was watching?
Okay, what you watching?
I'm only just going to try and make this as brief as possible. I listened to Chance the Rapper's album and, you know, I didn't get it before Brexit because I've been in a different space and I don't think I'm apart from Kendrick Lamar, I don't think I'm really into US rap anymore. I think Kanye just killed it for me. I think there's a song on, you know, the second song, the one with Kid Cudi, right? Where it sounded like Kid Cudi is literally, he thought this was his comeback song. He came to the studio all dressed, smelling nice, put his prayer, he's singing his best, beautiful day, morning, day. And then Kanye's talking about asshole and bleach on his shirt. And I'm just, every time I hear that song, I switch off at that one point. I'm like, I can't, this can't be my, and this was when I used to digest so much American politics and just scared of a Trump future. And then Brexit happened. And I went back and listened to Chance the Rapper's album. And I just can't buy it. I just can't. I just, my brain is just like, there's too much hope and I just don't get this. I'm just not, do you understand? Mans are out here. Mans are out here seeing doom and gloom. The fucking, the dragons are coming in from the south. Night King is coming from the north. And it's just, I'm sorry, this whole rhymey dimey stuff is just not, it's not me right now. I mean, UK rap, I'm into that. I'm into that industrial harshness, that harsh sounding. But people are coming in here with like multi-harmony gospel voices.
Well, how do you think, as an artist yourself, George, how do you think that art, music, movies, or just general expression will change in post-Brexit? Do you think Brexit will have an effect on it? Or do you think it might just be a blip and people just carry on? Because people are always going to want a party. Are always going to want a party. Either as a celebration of wealth or as a fantastical escape from poverty.
I think, something interesting happening, which I haven't really been able to articulate for a long time. Music is, like, taking off. Street music, especially, is doing relatively well.
Yeah,
but the streets ain't, and the streets are going to get colder. But that's going to take a little while, especially under the government that we've been under. Right now, it's like, back in my day,
here we go.
Back in my day.
Your day, man.
Back in my day. Tell us about your day, George.
In my day.
When was your day? What? Fantastic Four just came out, man.
But it was New Labour government.
Yeah.
Different times. Remember that?
Yeah.
New Labour government. Yeah. EMA for us. You know what I'm saying? Students had support. We had connections, youth facilities, so much stuff.
I mean you lost free education, but the stuff you gained.
Yeah, so like I grew up in a time where we had lost free education. Like I was six when free education was out the window. So I was like, alright, well, everything else wasn't as bad as it is now. Yet still, the climate on the streets was just crazy, man. It was crazy, like a lot of people I knew were just in the streets hard. And the music started like reflect that. The music really, really reflected that. But I think as the music became more successful, people started relaxing a little more.
Yeah.
Interestingly. Didn't necessarily reflect the political reality. It didn't parallel the political reality.
But people don't want political reality all the time.
Exactly. Though. Exactly. It's not going to... That's why it's not articulated in that space. You feel me? So...
To just jump in, I don't feel that since... Maybe the noughties, since I arrived back in the UK in 1999, I don't think there's been a point where the UK music scene, mainstream UK music scene, has articulated the state of things in reality.
I don't think that's happened in my lifetime.
I mean, I'm talking like, you know, 70s we got punk, 80s we had, you know...
Movement. But a lot of those things were blips because people look back and imagine they were like long, huge eras. Punk was only one summer.
Was it?
One summer, dude. The fact is, again, it's like
Clash One Summer.
What?
Clash One Summer?
Yeah, true. Punk. This is what, 77?
How many albums did he release?
It's not a matter of albums.
You just dropped three albums in
the album.
The movement.
Punk was dead by, what, 79?
I'm not talking about the movement. I'm talking about artists per se. Like, how many artists do we have now, mainstream artists do we have now, who are effectively tackling?
And also, you've got to look at the fact that people access their sources differently.
True.
Right? Yeah. So the fact is that if people can now access a political rant on YouTube, so that's why I think spoken word worked really, really well on YouTube, because people can say, okay, if I want to hear something deep and thoughtful, I can listen to George the Poet. If I'm in the club, I don't want to fucking hear George the Poet chatting some bloody My City. Do you know what I'm saying? I just want a beat. I just want to see a booty. I want cheap drinks.
That's not necessarily true, though. You know, I appreciate that you've done in terms of your music is that the idea that spoken word cannot be played in a club. Like, there is no form.
No, that's not what you're saying, though. You're saying the sentiment.
Oh, what do you mean?
In the club.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but even...
Like, unless people are setting aside the time, and this is what I find, bro. I'll tell you in my experience, like, I've got a wide range of listeners. But what tends to happen is people discover me. And although relative to what has been before, I might be a bit more prevalent than typically spoken word artists get, generally, everyone's like, how has it taken me so long to discover George? I get that tweet every... If I go to my Twitter right now, someone is saying, I've just discovered George the Poet. How has it taken me so long? Then they binge. They watch for like 4 hours if they have that time. Then they might have not checked me for another 4 months.
Yeah.
That's like, people want their moment of like, this is my deep moment. With that in mind, it's made me revisit. It's funny, we're talking about American rap originally, and it's made me revisit a lot. Like, for example, Nas, mainly Jay-Z. And I've realized, like, even when at his most basic club common denominator self, yeah, it's political. It's inherently political. Mm. It's inherently political because he's saying, like, for example, 1998, he won the Grammy for Best Hip Hop Album for Volume 2, yeah?
Right.
DMX weren't nominated. He just didn't go. He wasn't Jay-Z that we know today.
Yeah.
He should have been fucking grateful. But his metrics are like, this is hip hop. I don't know about you, I'm not Tupac, I'm not the most politically informed or whatever, whatever. But fuck that.
Mm.
And he's able to make that, he's able to articulate that given who he is,
mm.
who come, like, even, again, there's a line in Volume 2. I'm really interested in, like, late 90s, early 2000s Jay-Z. There's a line in Volume 2 on the song Money Cash Hoes. You remember that?
Yeah.
Where he says, that's the chorus. Money Cash Hoes. Yeah. Money Cash Hoes. Yeah. Ah, Money Cash Hoes. And he says, I know they're going to criticize the hook on this song. Like, I give a fuck. I'm just a crook on the song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's political. You feel me? Mm. That led to his comment. He's got in his song with Eminem, Renegade. When he's like, he's just going on a rant. Like, Jay-Z always comes across quite nonchalant.
Mm.
And that song, he was clearly bothered. He was like, I just read a magazine that fucked up my day. Do you lot listen to music or do you just skim through it? How can you talk about music that thugs relate to? You lot don't do nothing for us. I'm actually talking, the people that are locked up and selling drugs all agree that what I'm saying is consistent with their reality.
Mm.
Yet you lot feel like you have the authority to tell me that I'm socially regressive, I'm a parasite, I'm poisonous, because I'm giving you a truth that isn't suitable to your sensibilities, and I'm making money. The fact that I'm making money offends you. Bruv, when you actually understand that, it's like, nah, do you know what, yeah, that's political. But the way that he did it, because his incentive is to make money while telling as much of his truth as possible and sticking to certain codes, it's just packed in a very convenient package that is digestible to the mainstream.
That was the argument
I was about to say. He plays the game well, man.
Yeah, that's the argument I was trying to get to. So it's like the idea that, okay, then, say for example, you come in, right, and like, I don't know, let's just say you met James Blake on your, you know, whilst you were chatting to Prince Harry on a helicopter. Somehow James Blake's helicopter passed by, and two of you had a chat, two of you exchanged like details, and then when you landed, he gave you a beat, and that beat, Brexit just happened, so you can't even think about, oh, you're gonna do a poem about love or whatever. You just did,
it's on my mind.
Yeah, what's got 287,000 bars on Brexit. James Blake, being James Blake, took out the best 72 he could find, and he put down the song, and they're playing that song in the club. And people are jamming to it. That's happened, right? The whole idea of you coming with absolutes, like, oh, people are aware. People, like you said, people are willing to listen.
But Josh, people read into read into art. They take their own idea of what art is. Because, like, if you look at a song, one of the songs that was really big in the civil rights movement, it was
like Fuck the Police?
No.
Was that a political song?
What?
Was that?
To me, Fuck the Police is a very political song.
They played that in the club?
Did they
play in the club? People were dancing?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, just checking.
Yeah, but the fact is that they can't play that all night long. And the fact is, when I say people were dancing, because I fucking loved NWA, in my head, everyone was dancing. For all I know, everyone else saying, turn that goddamn shit off. Get that fucking kid out of here. You know what I'm saying, right? You know what I mean? That keeps requesting that shitty song that's ruining my fucking vibing time with my girl. So that's probably what happened. But in my head, the whole crew was dancing, and it was like a big bloody video, and we were all chilling.
Okay, cool. I guess that's a good place to end it on. Do you have a song for us?
I've got a song that we've all would love to hear.
Well, Fuck the Police.
No. I think we're going to go for Michael Jackson and Human Nature.
Right? Oh, see. Good choice.
So this has been Trying to Sound Intelligent. Thank you very much, George, for coming down.
Yeah,
I reckon we've solved Brexit.
We've solved Brexit.
You know what I'm saying?
Stop listening to stories.
Exactly.
And story time is over.
And start listening to poets.
Yeah. All right. Cheers. Just an apple, then let me know.
eyes are everywhere. See that girl, she knows I'm watching. She likes the way I stare. If they say why,